There's a little rubber and steel pump bolted to the back of your engine that you have probably never thought about, and it has been trying to kill you for about 70 years. Not on purpose, it doesn't have opinions, but it fails quietly, at the worst possible moment, and when it goes, it takes your artificial horizon with it. I'm Vector, and this is Cleared Direct on Radio Hangar. Today we're walking the exhibit hangars at AirVenture Oshkosh, past the glass panels glowing under the fluorescent lights. And we're going to talk about the single most important quiet revolution in the general aviation cockpit, the death of the spinning gyro. Let's break this down. Before we get into it, this segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey, beautifully made, heavy in the hand, built to last a lifetime of hangar flying. If you want something to mark the day the work paid off, that's AviationSoul.com. Okay, let's start with the problem, because you can't appreciate the fix until you understand what it's replacing. For most of the history of powered flight, your attitude indicator, the instrument that shows you which way is up when you can't see the horizon, has been a spinning metal wheel, a gyroscope, a little brass rotor spun up to 20,000 revolutions per minute or so. And the physics of a spinning mass is that it wants to stay pointed the same direction in space. Rigidity in space, they called it. You hang a little airplane silhouette on that stable platform, and as your real airplane pitches and rolls around it, the instrument shows you the difference. It's elegant. It's mechanical. It's genuinely one of the great inventions of the 20th century. And it flew crews through weather that would have killed everyone a generation earlier. But here's the part most people miss. How do you spin that gyro up to 20,000 RPM and keep it there? In the airplane you probably learned in, a Cessna 172 or a Piper Cherokee, the answer is suction. That engine-driven vacuum pump I mentioned sucks air through the instrument, and the moving air spins little buckets cut into the rim of the gyro rotor, like a water wheel. Air goes in, spins the wheel, keeps your horizon alive. Now think about that as a system. You have a dry carbon vein pump, spinning constantly, wearing itself down every hour the engine runs. The vanes are graphite. They're a consumable. And when they wear past a certain point, or when the pump seizes, it doesn't warn you. There's no low suction horn in most airplanes. There's a little suction gauge on the panel that nobody looks at. The gyro doesn't stop instantly either. That's the insidious part. It winds down slowly over several minutes, and as it does, your artificial horizon lies to you. It drifts. It rolls off to one side while telling you you're level. In visual conditions, no problem, you look outside. But in the clouds, at night, in the exact conditions where you're betting your life on that instrument, a dying vacuum pump gives you a slow, smooth, convincing lie. The data tells an interesting story here. The National Transportation Safety Board has spent decades cataloging accidents where a vacuum failure in instrument conditions led to spatial disorientation and a loss of control. It's a known killer. There's a whole training discipline built around it. Partial panel, we call it. You cover up the attitude indicator and learn to fly on the backup instruments, the ones that don't need the vacuum system. Every instrument pilot has sweated through it under the hood with an instructor. So that's the problem. A single point failure on a wear item with no warning that attacks you precisely when you're most vulnerable. For 70 years, that was just the cost of doing business in a light airplane. Here's what changed. And it didn't come from aviation. It came from your phone. Let's break this down, because this is the heart of the whole story. Inside the smartphone, in your pocket, there are sensors that know which way you're holding it. Rotate it, the screen rotates. There are sensors that count your steps, that stabilize your camera, that let a video game respond when you tilt the device. Those sensors are called MEMS. That stands for microelectromechanical systems. Say it as one word, MEMS. A MEMS sensor is a machine, but it's a machine carved into a chip of silicon, measured in fractions of a millimeter. Etched into that silicon is a tiny mass on tiny springs. When the device accelerates, that little mass shifts, and the chip measures the shift as a change in electrical capacitance. That's an accelerometer. There's also a MEMS gyroscope, which uses a tiny vibrating structure. When you rotate it, a force called the Coriolis effect nudges that vibration sideways, and the chip measures the nudge. That tells you rotation rate. Now here's the beautiful part. There's no wheel spinning at 20,000 RPM. There's no pump, there's nothing to wear out. It's solid state, which is engineer speak for nothing moves that you'd recognize as moving. It sips a trickle of electricity. and it costs in phone quantities a couple of dollars, but a raw MEMS chip alone won't fly you through a cloud. And this is where it gets clever. A single accelerometer gets confused because it can't tell the difference between gravity pulling down and the airplane accelerating forward. A single MEMS gyro drifts over time. Neither one by itself is trustworthy for attitude, so you combine them. You take three accelerometers, three rate gyros, one for each axis, often a magnetometer for heading, sometimes pressure sensors, and you feed all of that into a small computer running a piece of math called a sensor fusion algorithm. The classic one is named the Kalman filter, after Rudolf Kalman, and versions of it flew on Apollo. The filter blends all those imperfect signals, plays them against each other, and produces one clean, drift-corrected answer for where the horizon actually is. That whole package, sensors plus computer plus math, has a name. It's an attitude and heading reference system, AHRS. Pilots just say the letters IHRS or the AHRS. That box is what replaces the spinning gyro. And it has no vacuum pump anywhere in the picture. So let's talk about what's actually sitting on the exhibit floor here at Oshkosh, because this is where the technology stops being a lab story and becomes something you can bolt into your airplane. Walk the avionics halls and you'll see two products that tell this story perfectly. The first is from Garmin. It's called the GI275. Picture a round instrument, the same 3.25-inch hole in your panel that your old vacuum attitude indicator lived in. Same size. But instead of a mechanical gyro behind the glass, it's a bright touchscreen display driven by a solid-state AHRS. You pull the old instrument out, you slide this in the same hole, and now your attitude comes from silicon. Here's the detail the engineers are proud of. It has its own backup battery built in. If your airplane's electrical system quits completely, that instrument keeps showing you attitude for an hour on its own power. Think about what that means. The old failure mode, the one that killed people, was losing attitude when a pump died. Now the instrument has its own independent power source and no pump at all. The second one you'll see is from a company called UAvionics, and the product is the AV30. Spell that AV30. Same idea, a round, solid-state instrument that drops into a standard panel hole, and it's a bit of a chameleon. You can set it to display attitude, or you can set it to display heading, and some versions fold in other functions. What's notable about the AV30 is price. It brought certified solid-state attitude down to a number that a lot of owners of older airplanes could actually stomach, which matters enormously when the airplane itself might be worth $50,000 or $60,000. You don't put a $25,000 panel in a $40,000 airplane. The economics have to work, and UAvionics pushed hard on the economics. And that's really the story of the whole exhibit floor. In the experimental and home-built world, companies like Dynon and Garmin's experimental line put full solid-state glass in front of home builders more than 15 years ago at prices the certified world couldn't touch, precisely because experimental aircraft don't carry the certification burden. Oshkosh is where that happened. This is the launch pad. The home builders proved the technology was safe and reliable in tens of thousands of airplanes flying real cross-countries. And then that hard-won confidence flowed uphill into the certified fleet. The kit airplane on the grass field validated the avionics that eventually landed in the Cessna at your home airport. That's the pattern at AirVenture, over and over. The bleeding edge shows up in the home-built camping area first. So it's all upside, right? Rip out the pump, bolt in the chip, fly happy. No, let's be honest, because I promised you balanced, and there are real trade-offs here. Here's what most people miss. The spinning gyro had one genuine virtue. It needed almost nothing from your airplane except moving air. Solid-state attitude needs electricity. Reliable, clean electricity. You have traded a dependence on a mechanical pump for a dependence on your electrical system, your wiring, your alternator, and your battery. Now, engineers know this, which is exactly why these units carry their own backup batteries and why good installations think hard about redundancy. But it's a real shift in the failure modes. The thing that can kill your attitude is now an electrical problem, not a mechanical one, and you have to train and equip for that reality instead of the old one. Second trade-off, complexity you can't see. A mechanical gyro fails in an obvious physical way. A MEMS AHRS is software, and software has to be right across a huge range of conditions. These systems go through serious testing before they're certified, and the track record has been genuinely strong. But you are now trusting a sensor fusion algorithm and its programmers in a way you weren't trusting anyone before. When it's done well, it's more reliable than the old system by a wide margin. But done well is doing a lot of work in that sentence, and it's why certification and testing matter so much. Third, and this is the honest one, cost and certification friction. In the experimental world, this stuff is cheap, and it moves fast. In the certified world, every one of these units has to earn an approval, a supplemental type certificate for each airplane model. And that paperwork costs money and takes years. That's why your friend's home built had a gorgeous glass panel a decade before the same capability was legal to install in a standard Skyhawk. The technology was ready long before the regulatory system was. That gap is closing, and AirVenture is a big part of why, because it's where manufacturers, owners, and the Federal Aviation Administration all end up in the same tent. But the friction is real, and it's the reason adoption in certified airplanes has been a slow burn rather than an overnight flip. So what's the honest timeline? Here's my read. The transition is well underway, and it is not reversible. New certified airplanes are being delivered with all glass, all solid-state panels as standard. The vacuum system is already gone from most new production. Where the spinning gyro is making its last stand is the enormous existing fleet, the tens of thousands of older airplanes still flying with a pump on the back of the engine. Those convert one airplane at a time, one owner's checkbook at a time, usually when the old pump finally dies or when an owner is doing a panel upgrade anyway. That's a 15-20-year tale. But the direction is not in doubt. The last new vacuum-driven attitude indicators are being built right about now, and a young pilot starting today may go an entire career and never see a suction gauge. Who's building all this? The names to know are Garmin, which dominates the certified retrofit market, UAvionics, which pushed the price down and made it accessible, Dynon and the experimental crowd, which proved it first. And behind all of them, the chip makers, the companies etching those MEMS sensors by the millions for phones and cars and drones. That last point is the one I keep coming back to. Aviation didn't fund this revolution. The smartphone did. We are flying on the sensor technology that the consumer electronics industry spent billions perfecting, and we get to bolt it into our panels for a fraction of what it would have cost if aviation had to develop it alone. That's not a knock. That's just how a small industry catches a ride on a giant one. Here's the thing to sit with as you walk out of the exhibit hangar tonight. The instrument that kept airline crews alive for 70 years, that spinning brass wheel, is a masterpiece. It deserves respect, but its replacement is quietly, measurably safer because it deleted an entire category of accident. No pump to seize, no slow lying wind down in the clouds. A backup battery baked in. When you delete a failure mode, you save lives you'll never be able to count, because the accidents that don't happen don't make the news. That's the kind of progress I love, not the flashy kind, the quiet kind, sitting in a round hole in your panel, doing nothing but telling you the truth about where the horizon is. My thanks to the National Transportation Safety Board's accident data, to the engineering teams at Garmin and UAvionics, who were happy to talk shop on the floor, and to the Federal Aviation Administration's guidance on solid-state instrument approvals for the details on this one. You can find more at RadioHangar.com. Go find that little suction gauge on your panel before it's a museum piece. This is Vector. Fly straight and keep the shiny side up.